Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. The music sounds like we're coming from the beautiful savannah lands, and I guess we are in a kind of a steppe or savannah here in Texas. I'm coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Joining me today is internationally known author, humorist, and workshop leader Steve Behrman, who also morphs into his alter ego, forgive the pun, Swami Beyondananda, and is often found at the foot of the altar. We'll talk more about that later. Since 2005, Steve has written a political blog with a spiritual perspective entitled Notes from the Trail. And he's co-authored a book with well-known cellular biologist Bruce Lipton entitled Spontaneous Evolution. Marianne Williamson called him the Mark Twain for our generation. That's pretty high praise, isn't it? So it's a pleasure to welcome Steve Behrman to today's show. Welcome, Steve.
Well, thank you so very much. It's always great to talk with you and listen to you, Paul. It's great to be with you. And
excellent.
Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, and Steve's going to be joining us at the church in a couple of weeks to present some workshops and play shops and all kinds of fun things. So we're excited about that. But today we'll find out more about Steve and the great Swami. So in this first segment, I wanted us to talk about the state of the world and the state of humor. That should give us enough to focus on, shouldn't it, for a few minutes? And we're particularly impacted here in the States by a number of things, of course, but one is gun violence, because once again we've had a terrible shooting at a school in Oregon, as this show goes to air, that happened last week. And we're also cranking up for the presidential campaign for 2016, had some interestingly amusing things going on there, or less than amusing, depending on your point of view. And then we've got all the horrendous things that happen around the world, particularly thinking of Syria and many of the troubles that are happening for Europe right now with the mass exodus of people from Syria moving into Europe, etc., etc. Lots of things to talk about. So are you an optimist or a pessimist, or is that the wrong way to look at it?
Well, Swami says that there's two kinds of mystics in the world, the optimistics and the pessimistics. And as an optimistic, you know, there are a lot of people out there who say the glass is 95% empty, but I say no, it's 5% full. But I think that really keeping our eye on the prize, we're in times of tremendous change. And on the slightly more serious side, my book with Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here, really talks about these times being times of great crisis and great evolutionary opportunity. So just as when the caterpillar is transforming into the butterfly, inside the chrysalis, there are cells that are dissolving and cells that are reappearing. It appears very, very chaotic. The things that need to die are dying, and the things that need to emerge are emerging. And given the kinds of addictions and habits we have in terms of addiction to sensationalism, etc., the news media really prefers reporting the things that are falling apart, the horrific things. And, you know, it's really hard to report positive news. I mean, you're not going to hear 50 million people go to work and return safely today. Details at 11. You're not going to hear, you know. And so we are, and I think there is a certain intentionality on the part of the power structure to keep us in fear, to keep us divided, and consequently conquered. And so in these very interesting and chaotic times, humor is a bright light, not just to cheer us up, but also as a vehicle, as a delivery system for truth. And, you know, there's a reason why over the past decade, you know, people, more and more people have been getting their news from Jon Stewart and Bill Maher, Stephen Colbert, and now John Oliver, and some of these other people who are delivering the bitter pill of truth, surrounded by the sweet sugar-coated flavoring of comedy, so that we're able to metabolize some of the things that are going on right now.
Yeah, and interesting you bring those folks up, because I've been watching the new Late Show, you know, with Stephen Colbert, mm-hmm. and noticing what he's doing with that show. And it's very interesting because he combines, like you say, crazy humor that's often got a more than a grain of truth and wisdom to it. But he also has the courage to go straight sometimes, you know, and have interviews with folks that have had tragedies, like Joe Biden, for instance. And last night, you know, he had Yo-Yo Ma and Misty. I can't remember her last name now. I'm blanking out. But the great ballerina, the first African-American ballerina to be the principal prima donna at the American Ballet Theater. And it was just transcendent. You know, they did a beautiful dance to the music. Bach, I think it was, and you know, it wasn't just humor, it wasn't just silliness. It was a moment that was moving for everybody. At least I was very moved by it. And the point there, I think, is that you can combine the two, right? You can have crazy, you know, laughter that gets you in your gut, you know, one moment, and then you could be moved by something transcendent the next. And I think this is excellent that he's bringing that to the American audience. It's something relatively new, I think, you know, it to our culture, but it's to me, it's excellent.
You know, when my wife Trudy and I first started traveling around doing this Swami and Trudy show, I did the comedy, and as a nice surprise, because she's a natural innate dancer, she would be dancing as part of the program. And, you know, not while I'm performing, but as we, you know, I do a comedy set and she do a dance and so on. And somebody came up to us after the one of the shows and said, you know, the comedy opens the heart and the dance fills it. So mm-hmm. what happens is, you know, we really don't, you know, I think we permit ourselves to be open-hearted in certain situations. I think that generally, and I think there's many, many reasons for it, but over the past half century, I would date it from the Kennedy assassination, we've been cynical and shut down, and it's really hard to get that heart-opening expression in there without somebody going, you know, most comedy club comedy really has a takeaway at the end. There's not a space for open-heartedness because it makes people too vulnerable. And, you know, if you're vulnerable, let's say you're vulnerable to love, well, I'm not going to get fooled again. And so we close down to that. And right now, we need both the truth that's expressed through comedy, and then we also need to go even beyond that, even deeper into the truth that's expressed by love. Not so much the cliched idea of love, but really that opening and acceptance of all that is, that is a perspective that allows us to hold the big picture while we're watching some of these other, like you mentioned earlier, the insane shootings. There have been 264 mass murders in this country. It seems to be an American phenomenon. You know, and I think that what is really required, whether, you know, not even is it gun control, is it this or that? I think what's required is our civilization facing its shadow. And, you know, Nelson Mandela called it truth and reconciliation. I think there are many, many secrets, toxic secrets, that have to be revealed. And the veils, it's interesting, you know, apocalypse, the word apocalypse in its original meaning, it meant the lifting of the veils. And so in these apocalyptic times, the veils are being lifted, first of all, on these toxic secrets, and things that have been kind of too horrible to face that human beings have done to one another. And then the veils are also being lifted on these spiritual practices, whether they be from indigenous cultures or from Vedic medicine, ancient Chinese practices, shamanic healing, et cetera, or even the Judeo-Christian tradition that have been kept in protective custody all of these centuries because it was deemed that the human beings were not collectively mature enough to actually be able to hold these powerful tools. And now, as Bruce Lipton and I say in Spontaneous Evolution, part of our evolving from children of God to adults of good is to be able to hold our full potential and really recognize who we are. As it's been said many times, spiritual beings having a human experience. And from that perspective, being able to access those deeper resources that we all have, and most of us have forgotten until now.
Yeah, and America is kind of schizophrenic in that way, isn't it? It's highly sophisticated in some ways, and yet very dogmatic and primitivist in others. You know, you've got a strong anti-intellectual culture, sort of redneck culture, and then you've got you know, very sophisticated thinking going on exactly at the same time. And likewise, we have a sort of a prurient culture that, you know, is very open to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And yet there's also that puritanical side, you know, which is afraid of all that. And I think in a way it's that uncomfortable inability to blend the two that creates you know, the craziness we see around us, and we see it almost written in, you know, such obvious ways in the presidential campaign that's cranking up. You know, we got on the one hand you have you know, the side that is sort of almost sophomoric, you know, and
Swami would say not sophomoric but fresh manic.
There we go, fresh manic. You know, even younger than the sophomore. You know, Donald Trump consciousness, and then on the other side you've got somebody like Bernie Sanders, you know, who is you know, highly thoughtful and intellectual, but maybe too way out there for some, you know. So you've got, but they're both sort of out of the box thinkers, aren't they? They're both providing something to America that that the establishment we feel has let us down, you know, is struggling right now, and these people are, you know, doing very well. Whether that will continue, we will see. But I think there is that inbuilt dichotomy in our society here that we're going to have to reconcile. I think if we're going to move forward into the new paradigm that you're talking about. By the way, the ballerina's name came to me in a senior moment, I guess, Misty Copeland, and just an absolutely fantastic ballet dancer, and put together with Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great cellists of our age, and it was just transcendent experience there on that show. But, you know, how do we bring these incredible divisions together, you know, in our society? I mean, they seem to be getting more further apart than the other way around.
You know, in change, if you look at the cell dividing during mitosis, before it becomes the unity of one cell, you have this polarization pulling at each of these ends. And you can look at the polarization as something that's ripping something apart, as dueling dualities, or you can look at them as dynamic duo dance partners. And the it's interesting that in the great divisions that we have, Swami likes to say we have a deeply divided body politic. Half the population believes our elections are broken. The other half believe that they're fixed. And that in the most recent Gallup poll, fewer than 10% of Americans have faith in government. Fewer than 20% have faith in corporations. If we go back to when I was a kid, back in the late 50s and early 60s, we had during the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations, more than 80% of people had faith in the government. So I think that the Trump-Sanders polarity really represents a unity. And the unity is in the overwhelming agreement of more than 80% of the people in this country that the current system and ruling structure lacks legitimacy. So that if we look at each of these messages, while they may be polarized to deal with the most outside-the-box forces inside the left and right, they're both saying the same thing. They're both saying that the system is simultaneously broken and it's fixed. And, Trump, after all, is looking at, he is really representing the more populist wing of the Tea Party conservatives, and I've met many of them. And these are populists. These are people who don't want corporate rule. These are people who want freedom. These are people who don't want to be spied on by the NSA. And so because we have a very divisive, intentionally divisive media that prevents people from having real conversations and creates the heat of argument without the light of lucid ideas, what happens is these people on the awakening people on all sides have not really been allowed to converse. And there is, by the way, an emerging transpartisan independent political movement in this country that you don't hear anything about because the media is totally not interested in. It's off the media radar, but it is happening. More than, I think the most recent poll last year said that more than, I think it's at least 45% of Americans identify as independents, with 25% identifying as Democrats and fewer than 20% identifying as Republicans. I'm not sure, but that it was like independents were by far, I think they outnumbered both Democrats and Republicans. The thing is that there is no one really speaking to that, because really in order to speak to the real problems in this civilization, there are some very, very uncomfortable truths that have to be addressed. And, I'm not going to go into those, but I think we all know that, since World War II, since the end of World War II, we've been living in kind of an Orwellian state. As soon as the Department of War was renamed the Department of Defense, we went into George Orwell territory. Into the world of newspeak, where things are called the things that they're not. So this is great territory for comedy, because comedy is really about a couple of things. Really, it's taking ideas that are seemingly unrelated, possibly polarized, and showing a relationship between them. And comedy is also about telling the truth in such a way that people are able to in the space of laughter, and I'll talk more about that in the third segment, in the space of laughter, we're able to have more synapses synapting in our brains, more oxygen going to our brain, and we're able to encompass more expansive and more creative thoughts rather than the fear-based kinds of polarities that we've been that's been our default system.
Right, interesting. And you're right that both those candidates, are receiving money not from super PACs or from those typical sources of political influence and coercion sometimes, But in Trump's case, he's using his own money, and in Bernie Sanders, it's all coming from small donations from ordinary people, quote, like you and me. So they're both avoiding the trap of you know, being hooked to these all these forces that seek to control the political system, which is, again, a refreshing change, I think. So there's another point of view. Okay, I think we're at the break. But listen, folks, I invite you now to jump on your magic carpet. Come on, you know what it is. Jump on the magic carpet. And we're going to take a journey deep into the heart of the Indian subcontinent to the ashram, actually, of Swami Beyondananda, or as I like to call him, Sri 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 Swami Beyondananda. And so we're going to go there now. But let's listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come right back. And I'm going to be bowing at the feet of the great Swami when we come back in a couple of minutes. So join us then.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to live in joy? Is there an area of your life where you could use a miracle? Have you been praying for help and guidance? Come join Lisa and Bill and their guests for an hour filled with practical tips on experiencing miracles, greater abundance, focus, deliberate living, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding. Experience more joy in life. Listen to Living in Joy, Reflections on A Course in Miracles with Lisa Natoli and Bill Free every Friday at 2 p.m. Central here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to the second segment of my show. Folks, I'm now walking through the gates of the great Beyondananda ashram, and careful now, there's sort of cow patties around on one side, and there's crazy tuk-tuk taxis on the other, but there's a lovely smell of incense as I walk up the steps. It's thronged with people who have a big Swami bee emblazed on their outfits, and obviously we're here. My goodness, it's quite a place, and I hope you can feel the energy and of this beautiful ashram. And we're going to go into the inner sanctum. I believe that Swamiji is in audience right now. We're going to get his darshan. And so please let us all welcome Sri 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 Swami Beyond Ananda. It's so great to be in your presence, Swami.
Well, thank you. It's great to be in my presence, too. And I like the Sri 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 because good things come in trees.
And good things come in trees.
Yes, good things come in trees. And so I hope that everybody is wearing their 90 glasses with the third eye one up on top. So you can see nine dimensions in that.
I see. That's wonderful.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
You know, they say that money doesn't grow on Shrees, but I think it actually does, because I think a lot of you Shrees are quite well off, aren't you?
Well, I don't know. You know, I no longer have a problem with money. Without money, I still have a problem. So, you know, people say, Swami, I want to give you credit for everything you say. I say, well, that's fine, but I'll take cash.
All right, there's a cash-based economy there at the ashram, folks. So I have some questions for you, Swami. First of all, who are you? Who are we? And how do we live? There you go, three questions.
There you go. Well, how much time do we have?
Okay. About 10 minutes.
Okay, good. Well, here's okay, well, 3.5 minutes for each one. Okay, so first of all, who am I? Well, first of all, I am a being that I've had. In fact, you and I have gone. We've had many, many, many lifetimes together. In fact, you're talking about sitting at the feet. You and I sat at the feet of the Buddha. Are you remembering this?
Well, it's coming back to me now.
Yeah, well, the Buddha actually never washed his feet, so we were part of that first recovery group called Odor Eaters Anonymous. That was us. And then, of course, the next lifetime I remember with you, we were lamas in Tibet. Actually, you were a lama. I was a yak. And as we all know, a yak is a talking lama. As to who are we? We are essentially consciousness deciding to crunch down into this human experience so that we can have a bunch of good laughs. Because in a certain regard, I am a fundamentalist with the accent on fun. And we believe that life is a joke, but God is laughing with us, not at us. The Creator is watching the comedy channel. We are what's on. And so we get free choice in life. We get to decide whether or not we laugh. So you want to be miserable, go right ahead, whatever makes you happy.
Now, Swami, there's a movement out there right now that's become very popular in the West, particularly in Unity. There's a lot of Unity ministers, and it's based on the idea of what I think you Swamis call Shaktipat, which is the laying on of hands, you know, where energy is imparted from one to another. And I think it's called the Oneness Blessing, and many people go to India to find out more about it. In fact, to become practitioners of this blessing, and there's oneness blessing groups in many Unity churches. Some people don't like it. They say it's not really unity because it's relying on other people to bring us our good instead of going within to our own indwelling presence of truth within. So what's your view on that?
Well, you know, it is called the oneness blessing because it reminds us that we're all one. If I'm one, you're one too. And so consequently, any one of us ones can be the one to deliver the oneness blessing. And so consequently, it's not outside of ourselves, it is inside of ourselves, but through another person, individual, being, who is reflecting all of that oneness out there and being able to reflect that love back to us. Now, there is that energy, or you call the Shakti pot, which is probably the best kind of pot there is. Really, I'm telling you that they have now discovered that THC, we actually have THC receptors in our brains, a part of the brain apparently that is called the hippocampus. Yes? And when the hippocampus is activated, we actually see farce fields and laugh at invisible jokes. Well, we don't actually necessarily need any chemical stimulation to activate the hippocampus, but comical stimulation will do that. So in conjunction with this oneness blessing, there is, of course, the laughter yoga. That every time we allow ourselves to have the laugh force move through us,
we create holy healing. And what that does is it reverberates through our bodies. And what happens is there is often an aha in the wake of the ha-ha. There is an insight, and then there is an ah. As we sink from the dueling dualities of the head to the unity of the heart. And, you know, all this oneness blessing is doing, really, is getting us back in the heart. Because in the head, we have beliefs that keep us separate. And what people believe me, is unbelievable. So we need to leave the static of the head for the ecstatic of the heart. Because the more we expand our hearts, the less we will need to shrink our heads.
Very eloquently put, Swami. I'm amazed by your ability to bring the two disparate sides together in one beautiful wholeness. So are you? Would you consider yourself to be the original giggling guru?
Well, you know, actually, traditionally, many, many enlightened beings, or those who've been struck by enlightening, they recognize the cosmic joke. The cosmic joke is, particularly in this so-called civilization, that everybody is pursuing happiness and most people end up outrunning it. So we have to recognize that happiness is something that we generate from inside out rather than gather from outside in. And so part of that cosmic joke, all of the, you know, Maharishi was a great giggling guru. Satchidananda had a great sense of humor. Dalai Lama laughs all the time. They are laughing because they recognize what most of us are doing, are pursuing, is really the folly of the ego. Now, this is why situation comedies are so powerful, because they are reflecting back to us the Buddhist principle of attachment, that really most situation comedies, from Lucy to Seinfeld to any of the things that we're watching right now, what they are really about is about human beings wanting things to be a certain way and having the sense of humor of the universe, the trickster universe, to change it for them. And the reason why we are laughing is because it's exaggerated, because there's a laugh track that we can hear, and because it's happening to somebody else. So when we are watching a sitcom, the idea is to sit calm and get the spiritual message that most of what we are pursuing in life is folly. We already have what we require. And if we radiate love and laughter, the people around us will say, I'll have what they're having.
So now you don't accept that they couldn't be the path of the grumpy guru then? Because I know there are a few grumpy gurus out there.
Oh, well, listen, I think that if you're going to be grumpy, you have to enjoy your grumpiness. That is the whole purpose of it. I have a technique to channel this energy. I call it tantrum yoga. Use your anger to heat your home in the wintertime. Very, very powerful. So if you want to be grumpy, that is perfectly okay. In fact, I would be fine. You know, I think that we need to balance everything out. Yes, we have a happy hour in most places in this country, but why not honor the other dwarves and have a grumpy hour, a sleepy hour, a sneezy hour, and on and on.
All right, that's very good. I'm almost lost for words now, Swami. But that's
You are unworthy.
I am unworthy. I know.
Unworthy.
But I'm reduced to that beautiful place of stillness that I feel is emanating from your own heart to mine. And I'm in a beautiful place.
Well, you know, isn't it interesting that everybody is talking about mindfulness these days? When so many people are experiencing mindfulness, where their mind is so full, the idea is to empty your mind to achieve mindfulness. Isn't that interesting?
And so we need to be mindless, do we? Mindlessness.
Well, that's right. We have to be mindful. We have to be mindless. I studied with a very powerful teacher who said the key to enlightenment is to clear your mind of all thought and to reside in the center of yourself. And I did this, and sure enough, I ended up thoughtless and self-centered.
There we go. life is not all that it seems sometimes, is it? There seems to be contradictions. And like
well,
you say, once
right.
we release the inner THC, then we have this inexhaustible urge to go out and get some munchies.
Ah, yes, and there's plenty of karma fuel to munch on out there. That is why one of the great things about being in the material world, if you're a comedian, there's plenty of material.
Plenty of material. You know, I was looking at a documentary of Steve Jobs, and I know there's a new movie coming out about him, but this was a documentary about his life, and he was very into Zen Buddhism and had Koban Chino as his great spiritual master, and he always asked Koban if he could become a monk, and Koban Chino never thought he was ready to become a monk, and in fact, he said in the documentary that that Steve Jobs was a very brilliant man. Obviously, he's a genius in some ways, but he says he also was he felt he was too smart for his own good. And there's a balance there, isn't there? That Steve Jobs kind of ended his life. Obviously, he died, you know, of a terrible disease, but he also seemed to his devices seemed to become his children. And he showed us this wonderful garden of delights, but he had to have everything on his terms. And I thought, is that so true? You know, you were exalted in one level, and we're a great genius, and yet he was a person with not much empathy, it seems, for others, and probably died a little lonely in a way. So how do we balance that? You know, we don't want to be too smart for our own good, right?
Well, you know, there's that condition. And by the way, that was a very excellent documentary that I recommend everybody watch. Because on one hand, you know, this is what life is like. There is the light and the dark. And so the light is that he had the great vision to see personal computers, to name personal computers before anybody had the idea. And he persisted with that vision. And so all of these devices, the one that I am talking to you on right now, et cetera, et cetera. All of these was a Steve Jobs, his job. That was his job. Okay. Well, on that side, we have all of that. And then as we look at all of the people who got trampled underneath the bus as he pursued his vision and dream. And I think that we are living in a civilization that is very, very mental. And one of the reasons why we are having the problems we are having is because of the absent sacred in the middle. You know, there's a saying, human nature abhors a moral vacuum. And so when religion and science became two separate things, there is no common way that we express our unity and what is sacred. And so we honor the people like Steve Jobs who are brilliant geniuses. But there is a condition called smarterdom. And smarterdom is when we sacrifice true happiness for being right and being smart. And
yes.
I think that in the end, many people end up that way because they don't really experience all the fullness of love in life.
Yes, very good. Swami, I got to go back to the West now to pursue the rest of my life. And I know that many Swamis and Gurus, you know, like to impart a final blessing or gift. I know Sai Baba used to give out bracelets and rings and everything, and that'd be great if you could give me one of those. But I don't expect that from you. But is there one thing that you could give me as a boon now as I go back into the world?
Well, as a boon, I could give you a Daniel Boone coonskin cap. But no, I won't do that because we don't want to skin a coon. But I will give you this. I will give you this. This is a blessing, and it's about opening your heart to laughter and sharing it. May you wake up laughing and leave laughter in your wake. Namaste and namasgo. Goodbye.
Good Lord. He's just disappeared. He's just gone. Just like that, in a puff of incense, he was gone. But it's been a remarkable experience. I'm coming back down the steps, out into the busy crowds again of India. What a wonderful, chaotic, charming, and infuriating place it is. And I'm coming back to the studio. I'll be back probably in about 2 minutes after these messages, actually, from Unity. So join me and Steve once again. That was a remarkable visit, wasn't it, with Sri 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 Swami Beyond Ananda. All right, join us in a few minutes.
What if you could experience vibrant health, help heal the planet, and be a great friend to God's animal kingdom through simple choices you make at breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Authors Victoria and Adair Moran say you can do this easily, affordably, and deliciously in their new book, Main Street Vegan. Everything you need to know to eat healthfully and live compassionately in a real world. Loaded with practical tips, straightforward information, and fabulous recipes, Main Street Vegan will help you on your journey toward a plant-based diet. The perks include more energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, feeling younger as you grow older, and maybe even a boost to your spiritual life. Purchase Main Street Vegan from BN.com, Amazon.com, or your favorite bookseller.
Is there a difference between the spiritual teachings you know and how you live your life? Does your day-to-day experience reflect what you truly value? Are you ready to receive your life and live the gift that you are? Join Janice Campbell, licensed Unity teacher, author, and coach, each week as she shares inspiration and tools to help you identify and dissolve the limiting beliefs that prevent you from living the fullest expression of what you are. Talk with Janice live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Central on Receive Your Life, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back, folks. I'm with Steve Behrman. I just got back. I got a little bit of jet lag, but I'm doing okay. I can get through the rest of the show. But as you know, I've just visited Sri Swami Beyondananda there over in his ashram in India. It was a remarkable visit, actually. It was very forthcoming. And, you know, beneath all that numerous facade, he's a very profound man. He really is. He has wonderful things to say. And you know him quite well, Steve, don't you?
You know, it's funny. I know him so well. I've been his driver for about 29 years now.
All right. Yeah.
I drive him every place. Tomorrow I'm going to drive him from Southern California to Scottsdale and Prescott, Arizona. So we're on a Southwest tour. The following week, then we're in Boulder, and then we're in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, and finally, the weekend of October, was it 23rd and 24th, we'll be in Austin, and 25th, and then, of course, Unity in Fort Worth, when the Swami will appear on Saturday night, and then on Sunday, I will be helping people wake up laughing and leave laughter in their wake.
Very sweet. All right. So if you're local and would like to come on along for that weekend at Unity Fort Worth, many of our listeners, of course, are far flung and won't be able to make that. But it's nice to know that Swami's a busy man around the world. You know, you were mentioning earlier about the good news. You know, we don't get a whole lot of good news on the regular news outlets because, hey, you know, we want all the tragedies. But I was looking at something on the Fareed Zakaria show, which, you know, he's an interesting man because he does try and put forward some positive things. And it was about a man in England, actually, that invented a water purifying system in a box and originally made jerry cans, which became standard issue with the British Army and with Oxfam. Mm. But he was asked to make a cube so it could be used by children or anyone. It didn't have a whole lot of strength to lift large quantities of water. You could dip it into the stream or whatever and take filthy water, just pump it, and it comes out clean. So it's quite a quite a pump that's in there. That's the business end, but now it's distributed all over the third world. And he made a tank size one that works on gravity, so you don't need to pump it. And I think one of them is in Borneo, and it's given water to over 1 million people so far. So, you know, this is a wonderful invention. And what's profound about it, and I think this will be in tune with your thinking and writing, Steve, is that instead of large corporations or, you know, non-NGOs being involved in a huge project, you know, the water purifying projects that then, are, you know, have power over ordinary people, because it's reliant on large amounts of money. This is something in the hands of ordinary people. So it's a democratizing process. You can purify your own water. So, you know, it's a whole a game changer in shift of power there back to ordinary people again. And I think that's a huge thing. Not only do you get clean water, but you are empowered as you do so, which is wonderful, I think.
You know, there's so much that I learned in working with Bruce Lipton, the cellular biologist, in writing Spontaneous Evolution. And one of the things I learned is that nature is fractal, and that patterns repeat at different levels of complexity. And so what we if we look at how evolution has happened since the original single-cell organism, what's happened is that as every phase of evolution involves two things, an increase of awareness, because after all, when a single cell becomes a multi-cell, it has access to the awareness of all of those other cells. The other thing has been through the power of connectivity and community, that as these cells join together, they operate way, way, way more efficiently. So one of the great discoveries in spontaneous evolution that Bruce came to as a cellular and evolutionary biologist is that the next phase of human evolution is recognizing that we're really all cells in the same body, in a super organism called humanity. And when we look at where we are right now, if we were to, you know, 50 years from now, if we look back at this phase that we're in, and how so much of our energy goes toward operating in cross purposes, where healthy, well-meaning cells are pitted against other healthy, well-meaning cells. And what happens is we, through warfare, through the more toxic forms of exploitation of one another and planetary resources, and toxic forms of competition, me versus you, we are using tremendous amounts of energy. And if we were to liberate that energy that goes into preserving these large institutions and organisms, just like the preserving these corporations and governments that are, they want to sustain themselves like every other organism wants to survive and continue living. That most like, for example, after I live in Northern California, and the county north of us, Lake County, just had severe tragic fires where the entire town of Middletown and Harbin Hot Springs and all of these things are wiped out. So this exposed Red Cross. And Red Cross, of course, for years and years, that's been the go-to place. Well, Red Cross, when you look at how much money, when people donate money to Red Cross, how much of that goes to their infrastructure and how much goes to actually help the people, it's really, really shocking. So these infrastructures are designed to perpetuate themselves, whereas these ad hoc entities that form to relocalize, and like this wonderful water system, there are now Elon Musk, who created Tesla, now has developed these much more portable small batteries that allow people to store their own energy and sell it back to the grid. So decentralization of food and energy is a very important trend of the future. And of course, what we have is a system. I'm going to use the word totalitarian because the end game of the current structure that is in place has to be totalitarian, because it's looking to control everything, and the absurdity of controlling everything it's both scary and absurd and impossible. So it will fall apart. The caterpillar will fall apart. In the process, there's going to be suffering. People are suffering from a financial system that honors 1% and ignores 99%.
So practical things that we can do in our world today, based on some of the things we've already talked about, how can we take charge? How can we be part of the solution?
Well, in spontaneous evolution, Bruce and I came up with a three-step program because, hey, who has time for 12 steps? A three-step works four times faster. So our three steps had to do with evolutionary awareness, evolutionary intention, and evolutionary practice. And, if you want to substitute the word loving for evolutionary, you can do that because really in this recognition that the next phase of human evolution is we're all cells in the same body, really we're all in love with each other. We're really all part of the same system. And just like we would, when the Native Americans talk about all our relations, they recognize that oneness is everywhere. Oneness is it's a part of everything and everyone. And so as an individual, we are just an individual expression of that. So when Bruce and I wrote Spontaneous Evolution 6 years ago, we thought that spontaneous evolution was a noun in the future. And now we're coming to see it's a verb in the present. It's happening right now. So the first thing is to become aware that two things are happening simultaneously. The caterpillar is falling apart, and that's the structures of these insane institutions that seem to be doing the exact opposite of what they're supposed to be doing. And at the same time, things like you just talked about, this portable water treatment is emerging. So what we want to do is we want to take the caterpillar in our awareness and shift it into the background and put the emerging butterfly, the connecting imaginal cells that are showing up in terms of things that show to us and enable us to all be in it together, and put that in the foreground. So perhaps for every complaint statement, for everything that we see that's wrong, it would be an interesting awareness practice to identify four things that are working that we want to support and move forward. The second thing is evolutionary intention. I think one of the great things, while somebody asked the Swami a while back, do we create our own reality? And Swami says, well, we used to, but now it's mostly made in China. But really, this idea of creating our own reality, whether or not we may not be able to create the circumstances in our lives, we can certainly create how we use those circumstances and what we intend. What is the laser focus that we have in our lives? So perhaps if we had the intention when we get up every day that our activities of the day, and it could be the same thing we did yesterday, chop water, carry wood. No, it's not quite right. Something like that. Whatever it is that we're doing, we have that intention that this is to serve all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be nourished. May all beings be served by this, that. And that includes me, right? So if we're doing something, if we're involved in an endeavor, naturally we want to be thriving in this endeavor. And that endeavor should also be one where others can and will thrive at the same time. So, there's that famous story about the Native American grandfather and his grandson. And the grandfather tells the grandson, I have two wolves inside of me. One is the wolf, and these wolves are fighting with each other. One is the wolf of love and expansion. And the other is the wolf of fear and contraction. And they're fighting each other. And the grandson says, which wolf will win? And the grandfather says, whichever one I feed. And so this is a practice for all of us. I get grumpy. I complain. And in these times where we're making this this shift into really a larger view of what the enormity of life in the universe is about, to be able to hold that, remember that loving intention whenever we can. And then finally, there's evolutionary practice, and that is, what is it that we do on a daily basis? Whether it be our work with a capital W, whether it be how we serve simply in our in the daily darshan we give to other people in whichever ways we can give it, what however we be in the world, that we are a light. You know, there it's been said there are certain people who light up a room when they leave. So we don't really want to be those kinds of people. We want to be the kind of people who actually proliferate and perhaps proliferate joy. And I have this self-paced online course that I call Wake Up Laughing and Leave Laughter in Your Wake. And this is something that, you know, people can do at their own pace. And it really teaches people how to cultivate the how to think like a comedian, how to cultivate the magic of comedy, and then how to share it with other people in a way that opens their hearts and in a way opens their minds. And we need open hearts and open minds in these times.
Beautiful. Well, let's create a nonstop proliferation treaty, shall we? That would be wonderful.
We're at the end of the show.
Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Steve and Shri. As also next week, prolific author and publisher Alan Klein joins me to talk about his latest book. It's entitled "You Can't Ruin My Day." So we'll find out if we can, shall we? No, we're not going to. We're going to find out how the wisdom of that statement can be ours. You can't ruin my day. So join us then. First of all, before we finally say goodbye, thanks, Steve, for being with us. I had a great time.
Thank you. And tell Alan I said hi. I just interviewed him for my class.
Oh, neat. Know him. Yeah, great guy. He's been on the show a few times before. So, and thanks for listening, folks. And join us next week, and keep this message of an awakening world on the air. Consider clicking that donation button. Thanks again for all you do and to support this message of possibility in our world. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, Ph.D., interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes
sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.